My name's Dave White, and I co-manage Technology Assisted Lifelong Learning, or TALL for short, which is always unfortunate. We're just up the road, and we collaborate quite a bit with the Learning Technologies Group and talk to people at OECS all the time. And one of the things we're doing is a study for JISC on the impact of OER. And that's got me to thinking about, you know, what does impact really mean, on what basis? JISC have got a particular idea of the type of impact they'd like to see, because it reflects the kind of philosophy of the funding originally. But as we've been seeing this morning, 49,000 hits, who are those people? You know, are they coming to your uni? But it's difficult to assess, but like you say, how can that be a bad thing? So what I wanted to do just in this session is I'm going to talk for a chunk of it, and then we're going to do something, and we're going to do something pedagogically radical, and you're going to have to draw on bits of paper and all that kind of stuff, which should ease us towards lunch in quite a nice way, I hope. So I wanted to think about it more broadly. I've been thinking about this much more broadly in the sense of digital identity, because all our institutions are out there on the web now, and you don't get any choice. You know, you have to. It would be ridiculous to imagine that you wouldn't choose to have, say, a website. Okay, but not so long ago, there were discussions as to what the value of that was. You could argue that there might still be discussions as to what the value of it is, but you've still got to do it. Now, in the kind of areas I hang around with, the idea of digital identity has been talked about quite a lot, but usually down at the level of the individual. What's the individual's digital identity? What does it mean to have a Facebook account? You know, is it important to be visible out there? What are the benefits? What are the pros? What are the risks? Etc. etc. But now increasingly, I think we're looking at what is the digital identity of your institution? Where is the digital identity of your institution? Which bits of it can you influence? Which bits are important? Where should you put your effort? On what basis? Etc. etc. So obviously for Oxford, that's the identity that would spring to mind for a lot of people, but in actual fact, obviously Oxford takes an enormous amount of different shapes and has different angles. And these days, an institution's identity is projected, you know, the institution become very leaky from the point of view of its identity because of the web and the way that people can engage with it. Now, what originally got me thinking about this was we did this study of UK online learning, which fed into the Online Learning Task Force's report, which is sat just there. And we were looking at online distance learning courses, because obviously that is, we're looking at MIT and their open courseware, but in terms of courses in a more traditional sense that you pay to go on and somebody teaches you something, it was interesting to me that MIT said, that somebody said in that MIT thing, it's amazing that such an important institution would do this. As if you weren't an important institution, it wouldn't be that weird for you to give your stuff away. But if you are important, it's amazing for some reason. There's some very interesting little phrases hiding in the way that this stuff is communicated. So we looked at online distance learning across the UK, and this is the picture that came back, which was that it was mainly at level 7, so mainly sort of MAs and MPhils. And in relatively, you could describe kind of vocational, career-orientated subjects. Okay. And it struck me that from the point of view of what the world saw of UKHE online, the picture was very skewed. It was something very particular. It appeared that we were like an MA, you know, that all we did was law and business at that kind of level. So I didn't have a problem with that kind of activity, obviously, but it's just struck me that the digital identity of HE globally, online, when it came to courses, was something very particular. So, you know, obviously that's just one area that you're out there is in online distance courses, and what we're discussing today is online educational resources, but there are other angles, and here's a very rough and ready list of some of the places that you exist as an institution online. And I, you know, again, I'm not from a marketing background, so I'm not trying to say anything too clever here. I just want to take that broader picture. In terms of the institutional website, I quite like this. I quite like this cartoon that comes from the XKCD website, which is reasonably accurate. So if you look at it closely, you see that on the left-hand side, the institute. And I'm not saying that's what happens. But On the left-hand side, you see that the institution is obviously very interested in kind of broadcasting who they are and how important they are and all the worthy things they do. On the right-hand side is pretty much admin. People just want administrative conveniences, okay? Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. There's some truth in that. But it brings up that question of, you know, what exactly is your approach in terms of putting the character of your institution out there. Now, in other areas, and this is deliberately obscure because I don't want you to get too caught up in the actual numbers, you know, you've got social media. Should you be in Facebook? Should you be in Twitter? What's the actual value of that? I mean, there are a lot less, there's about a fifth less users of Twitter. You know, there's only a relatively small percentage of them are between 18 and 25, whereas on Facebook there are five times more users and a much greater percentage of them between 18 and 25, so you have a presence there, you have more of an effect, blah, blah, blah. And it's still the Wild West in terms of, you know, what people are saying and what it all means in this area. Okay, so it comes down to a question of where do you put your effort and on what basis, what's your kind of approach to this stuff? So this, I just picked this out partially because it's about me and I like talking about me, but also because it's an interesting sort of example of what I'm trying to bring out here. Has anybody heard of the site Clout? Okay, no. It's starting to get into kind of social media geekery now. Anyway, you can go to the site Clout and you can type in your Twitter address, if you like, your Twitter identity, and it uses all sorts of different metrics to assess your online influence, okay, whatever that might mean. So it doesn't just go by how many people follow you. And as an experiment, I put mine in and Oxford University's, and we have the same Clout score, which must mean I'm as influential as the University of Oxford. Must do, mustn't it? Now clearly, that can't be the case, all right? So how come I've got the same score as Oxford University? Well, the reason being that this account is run on a very different basis to my account, okay, for good reasons, okay? So the Oxford University account, which I find very useful to follow, what it does is it tells me when an interesting news story comes up or when an interesting piece of research is being released into the sort of public space, and so if it says something interesting, then I'll go and have a look. Whereas I tend to have this much more conversational approach, okay? So my digital identity is much more about being part of a discussion and feeding into that and sort of promoting my own ideas, but also listening to others and having that back and forth, if you like. So according to Clout, we have the same amount of influence, but it's on a completely different basis. And I think it's a good example of the difference between a kind of a broadcast approach, which is often how institutions think and also kind of how they have to function. So from an institutional perspective, and then on the other side, a completely individual perspective, which is much more about, I think this is the conversation, let's talk about this, let's move this area on, okay? And yet we're supposed to have a similar amount of influence. So I think that I found that interesting, especially relative to OER, in that watching those videos this morning was instructive for me, because you know this idea of openness has come from grassroots upwards. There's no accident why MIT were first in there, because they had all the kind of web geeks in there who had this kind of philosophy of openness, so it's kind of inherent in that institution. And for years and years, we've been talking about openness and this idea of engaging and this idea of this sort of conversation or dialogue and how it would allow, you know, the internet, the connectivity of it would allow more people to be part of this dialogue, part of the conversation. And then I think it was in 2009, I went to the Association of Learning Technology conference, and I heard Martin Bean, the almost VC of Open University, or he might have been in post for about a couple of weeks, telling me all that stuff back to me, but from an institutional point of view. It's just very interesting hearing that language come back, but from an institutional perspective and how that kind of changes it, because I think what it does is it shifts it almost by accident away from the conversation towards broadcast. And that's not a criticism, it's just an interesting thing that's happening there. So we end up with, and as you said, there's plenty of stuff in between these, okay? So these are either ends of spectrums, if you like. There's I think that there are a number, when it comes to the digital identity of an institution, and you could be thinking about this in terms of OER as well, there are a number of these interesting kind of, not oppositions, but scales. So there's the institutional versus the individual. So obviously there's lots of individual academics blogging and tweeting, etc., and they do go to make up what the digital identity of your institution is, as well as the institutional output. There's this difference between a kind of broadcast approach and a conversational approach. And generally speaking, a conversational approach will be at an individual level, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. And then certainly in OER, one of the things that's been coming out is the difference between OER for marketing and for teaching and learning, whether they have to be different or whether they're one and the same thing, and what that means, and whether OER for teaching and learning actually do look different from OER for marketing, or whether there's some kind of overlap. And that's, I don't know the answer to that. So, having thought about that kind of area, I put it into this is just a habit of mine, I put it into this kind of grid, and we'll come back to that in a second. But I think it's interesting to plot what kind of activities you think your institution is doing in terms of the way it projects itself online against these poles. It's quite an interesting exercise. So I did this just very quickly with myself and the Oxford University Twitter feed. So they're in different spaces, different pros and cons. Okay. So incidentally, there's only about 1,000 people follow me, but 13,000 people follow Oxford University. So when Oxford says something, an awful lot more people will listen. In terms of OER, I mean, in Oxford, if you think about iTunes U, that's obviously projecting quite a strong institutional identity and in quite a broadcast way. But that's not necessarily quite true, because a lot of people might come to that because of the individuals, because they're interested in the particular academics that are speaking, and so it drags it perhaps more across this way. Right, so really what I'm looking at... The point of this kind of a grid here is to position things so that we can have a useful discussion about them, really. Because one of the things that I'm finding is that if you say OER, everybody talks about different things. And if you say openness, everybody talks about different things. They're just such enormous areas. You have discussions with people for, it takes about 20 minutes before you realise you're talking about completely different things. This is a question that's come out of the study that we've done so far, which kind of puts the thing on its head. And I'm not necessarily saying that this is a good or a bad thing, but the question itself puts the area into a different perspective. Is, well, what if we asked our students to make OER and then put them out there? Or what if they are making OER and putting them out there anyway? And what does that mean? Because it causes us to reconsider the potential role of what this stuff is and what it might do. And there's all sorts of middle ground in there. I mean, I could imagine an OER that had been produced by students that was then used to market the institution being incredibly successful, potentially. But at the moment, because of the way the funding's been, we tend to think of, let's make stuff that the institution's happy with, and we'll put it out there. And then that's where the discussion stops. And maybe we get massive hits, but What does that mean? And I'm not saying I know what that means either. So just to finish off me talking, and then we'll do that kind of exercise. I think a lot of it does come down to openness and what you think openness is. So for me, in my personal practice, openness is about a discourse. I think... At an institutional level, openness is about making things available to people. Perhaps, maybe not. I mean, that's what we can discuss next. And there's probably everything in between. So as you said, you know, at departmental levels or group levels, there might be sort of different slices to this. But it's interesting to consider, because your list of open, you know, like open source software, open educational resources, open research, open data, the actual word open meant something different in every single one of those bits of the list. And that's really where I'm at. So I'm just trying to sort of start a discussion. I'm not trying to answer any questions necessarily in that terribly annoying, slightly academic way. Yeah, but anyway, let's have some lunch. Thank you for your attention.